you going, yeah? How you going, yeah? How you going, yeah?
G'day, Ross with the Cosmic Psychos. Welcome to How You Going, the show where I sit down for a drink and catch up with one of my mates. Your neighbour mate in this episode is the guitarist and lead singer for the June Rats. If Cyndi Lauper had written Boys Just Want to Have Fun, then she would have been singing about the Journeys. Psychos and the June Rats go a long way back. They're like the little brothers we never had. I love playing with them on stage and mucking about with them once the show's done. Since 2010, the Journeys have released 5 albums and know how to make bloody good music video clip and regularly play their sold-out shows to hundreds and thousands of screaming fans. They even started their own label, Ratbag Records, to help other up-and-comers get their music out into the world. Danny and I caught up way back in December last year, right before he was due to take the stage. He'd recently become a dad and was all set to shoot off overseas on a big tour. We cracked a couple, actually several, heaps normal and bod-riggy cosmic psycho drafts and met up in his hotel room for this little chat. And while I got ya, Cosmic Psychos have a new album out on November the 7th called I Really Like Beer, and it features BC from the Journeys on drums, and he'll be joining us on the second leg of this upcoming tour. We'll be heading up and down the East Coast, over to the West and heaps of other places in between. Visit cosmicpsychos.com.au for details and tickets. Anyway, so Danny, how you going?
Good night. I'm a little bit dusty from last night, but
good to hear.
I'm in good spirits. I've just spent 4 hours in a van with BC and Brett and the band that we're on tour with, Greg, who is Toby from Skeggs' new band. So it's been a pretty joyous 4.5 hours. We stopped at a little pub and had a couple of hair of the dogs and
a couple of heart starters.
Yeah, a couple. I swear, out of everyone, you have the most words for beer that I've ever heard out of anyone.
Well, it's only four. Hang on, B E E R. There's only 4 letters in beer, but they can grow.
Yeah,
if you think of every word in the world that starts with B, E, E, or R, you're pretty well right. And you've had a birthday recently.
I did. We both. I didn't realize our birthdays were so close apart.
Yeah. Well, how is it? Yeah, you've just turned 72.
Mm.
You're feeling fine.
Look, 71 was rough, but 72 felt good. No, it's good. I mean, I was lucky, as you would definitely have had lots of shows, birthdays on tour, sorry. I was fortunate that we were in New Zealand on my birthday playing a show in Auckland, and we had a couple of days off, which is unheard of when you're touring, to have your day off and it's your birthday.
Jeez.
So the boys, we went to Waiheke Island and we just had a lot of beers. And, you know, I think BC, it really made it special, but I think it's because it's just an excuse to get really drunk, you know, if it's someone's birthday.
But isn't that explaining rock and roll
yeah.
in one sentence?
It is.
An excuse.
It is. It's just we have to do the show to get the beers.
Unreal. And how is it being a dad too? That's what I've got. I really want to know how that experience is going for you.
It's awesome. I do find it's funny because I've got, you know, with technology now, probably advanced a little bit more since you first became a dad. I go on tour and I set up my phone before I go to bed with the camera. So I go to bed and I can see Snowy.
Mm.
And when he wakes up, I feel like I'm at home a lot, like while I'm still on tour,
which
I mean, back in the day, you guys didn't get that luxury. I remember speaking to John Brewster from the Angels saying that, you know, I think he had one of his kids when he was on tour in America and he didn't see him for a month and a half or something. He got a telegram or something. And
yeah.
It was, how was that for you when you first became a dad?
It was hard. It was really hard. Mm. But because when you're away, and you, even with the camera, you'd know this, if you're away and you go back, kids change so much day to day. But when you're there with them every day, you don't kind of know. It's just a progression.
Yeah.
And I used to come home after a month and just go, bloody hell, what's happened? It's a different person. The personality's grown and not having that technology, it was a pain in the ass.
You do feel as well. I remember coming back from New Zealand because they just get thicker at this age. He's only 3 months old and he's just growing. I used to be able to hold him with one arm really easily and now I need 2 arms and he's...
Mate, you need to get fit.
Yeah, I know. I know. I needed you to carry the beers up here, so
Geez, no problem. Anyway.
But he's when Jen was going to have Snowy, we were on tour in September, and it was real touch and go whether I'd be back for the birth. And I remember you actually saying to me, because I was seeing you, and you were just saying it's just one of the best things ever to try and get there for it. And I was stoked that I got home a few days before he was born. And
yeah, because you were at the Forum. And
yeah.
That was, and I remember talking, and you had some space age kind of, I don't know if SpaceX was involved in it, but there was some kind of secret service.
It was
then.
It was a bit ridiculous, yeah.
There was like a pager and a...
Yeah, I had like an old phone that was only for if she was going into labor, and I was a flight charter booked ready at each stop. It was looking back on it, I'm so thankful I didn't have to use that, because I'd be paying that off for I'd have to start another band just to pay that off.
Let me pay it off.
Is being in a band something that you've ever wanted for your kids? You know, because people see, they go, maybe it's just a reaction to people when they see you with your son and they go, do you want him to be in a band? Or they think you want him to be in a band because you're in a band. And I'm kind of like with someone like, I'd probably like him to be a tradie. He'd be at home. He'd earn good money.
Steady work.
He's not torturing his body as much.
Yeah, look, I think tradies go pretty hard on and off the job, I reckon.
Yeah. Actually, they go a lot harder than me when I'm at home. Yeah.
No, look, I don't know. I never really thought of it too much. Like, one of my boys flirted with being a bass player for a little while.
Yeah,
and then he came across the Great Wall of Theory.
Yeah.
Which I call it, which is a load of garbage. It was musical theory's been out since they built the Great Wall of China. Yeah. It's outdated. It's a load of rubbish.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why people that follow theory and music are still playing in orchestras playing 500-year-old songs.
Yes, yeah.
They're not advanced.
It's funny with theory because I reckon it's funny that a bit of music has to tell you, like, the emotion in it, you know, like where they don't because when you're in a rock band or any band, a collaborative band, you kind of just play and you're not to a script, but it feels very boxed in with playing to sheet music.
Yeah.
It's like you've got to hit
shit
this
music.
Note. Yeah, shit music.
all respect.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if this podcast is going to be listened to by too many of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, but
it gives people jobs.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's three in the June Rats, there's sometimes four, and there's three in the Psychos usually.
Yep. One Dune Rat's been moonlighting over for you guys.
Of course, yes.
How have you found touring with BC?
He's been unreal.
Yeah.
He's been unreal.
Yeah.
He's quite good. He's very good to spring stupid games on.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like, you know, BC's probably, I can't think, but he's 30 years younger than me.
Yep.
But
physically, mentally, I don't know about that.
Well,
I think you're very close.
Yeah. Well, actually, I stopped maturing at 14.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. But it's great to spring stupid games on him. And I'll talk to you about what you guys do because it's humour, I think, gets you through trying times.
Yes.
But we had a wonderful little game when BC was on tour with us called Secret Pubs.
Yep.
So when you're staying in the accommodation that's not quite right, there's no TVs. It looks a bit half a star.
Okay, yes, sure.
And you're all stuck in three rooms. And so you just clear the beds out of one room, put a heap of beer in there, and no one's allowed to come in until they knock on the door.
Okay.
And then when they knock on the door, you say, are you an undercover cop? And if they say no, they can come in and drink. Hence the name Secret Pub.
Okay, it sounds like.
It doesn't sound much, but after a few cans
and
people that think it's stupid want to join in.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
It sounds like an adult version of when you used to build a fort in your living room and over sheets and chairs, and you could say, do a secret knocking, come in, but it's just you guys drinking beer in there instead of fighting dragons and rescuing princesses. No, I know BC said the same for you because I said, how's the tour going? He goes, I just love how much you guys love every day getting into the van. And like you said, it can definitely get trying on tour, especially the longer the tour goes on. But you need to have a group of mates that you just you let water off a duck's back. The amount of one-star hotels that you stay in and that cycle you get into, you know, you drink because you're tired and you're tired because you drink and the late nights. But he really enjoyed that Europe trip. He said, came back and said, it's epic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you blokes appear to be on the same level as us, because when it's getting at its worst, like when you're you're just exhausted, it's better to take a funny side of it than just go, now I want to go home.
Well, I do remember when we did a tour. It's now getting nearly 10 years, I think, when we first toured together. We were in WA and we were in that bus driving out to look at the massive surf. Do you remember that? We were driving through the dusty road and it was a huge swell on. So we were going to go have some beers and watch the professional surf. I don't know what was going on in the van, but I remember sitting at the van looking at it all. And there was at the time just this big weight on ourselves to try and succeed, whatever success is. But at the time it was like to try and just be big. And seeing you guys just the way that you carried about touring, loving playing, being mates, kind of just completely knocked that idea of what success is and just went, nah, if I can be doing this in 30 years with these fellas, still having beers, laughing with each other, being mates and playing music, to me that was success. And so it's really helped us for the last 10 years to just check ourselves. You know, you shouldn't try to aim for anything more than enjoying your company, writing music that you want to write, play music that you want to play. It actually was a huge relief to take that off our shoulders and probably meant that we could, you know, play for 10 years.
Yeah.
Did you find that that's – because there's been – every now and then there's a bit of a revolving sort of lineup with the Psychos. Not revolving, but you've had members come and go.
Yeah, every 10, 20 years they come and go.
And but Macca in particular is just you two. But do you find that? You find that it's the other fellas in the band that help you keep doing it?
Got to have that chemistry. It's got to be there. Everyone's got to want to do it. Because if someone doesn't want to do it, it's sort of like, what are you doing wrong? You almost blame yourself or something like that.
Because people don't realise how much of a relationship being in a band is. You know, my wife, Kaz, has probably said it too as well. It's like they share you with the band members, because when you're having a disagreement about something, or if someone's super quiet, you're kind of like, I hope they're all right. Like, what's going on? Is it me? And you're in two marriages, definitely. Oh,
yeah, and I've been lucky enough to be in a band where there's any disagreements, they're solved quickly, where someone leaves or you just try and sort it out.
Yeah.
In life.
Yeah.
Everyone tiptoes around the problem.
Yes.
Perhaps for a little bit. I'm only speaking for myself. Yeah. I mean, we all love our wonderful partners. I don't think I've ever had the shits with anyone that I've played with for longer than about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
No. So you can just get it out.
Yeah, 100%.
But the other stuff is sort of like, I'll just stay at the back and I'll stay up. I'll go for a drive in the ute and drink a few cans.
I'll go check the back fence.
Hopefully it'll all sort itself out. Yeah, but as you said, close proximity.
Yeah.
You've just got to. You've got to work shit out.
Yeah.
Because if it festers for too long, it just – everything in a band situation, even though you can be playing for years and years and years, but situations like that go a million miles an hour, as the good times do, when you go, that was unreal.
Yeah.
And you go, Jesus, just that happened so quick.
Did you find, and this is not to name drop, the massive support that you just did, but with Eddie and Pearl Jam and those fellas that you've known since the 90s, do you find that they still have the same chemistry? Like, do you find the bands that you've met from back in the day, toured with, are they still all real tight with their people? Or
they're just completely unique.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I've never seen, I've seen a lot of Pearl Jam shows because we're mates.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen them play so well, so hard and so connected.
Yeah.
And it all starts from the ground floor, like their security, their crew, everything they've got is just supportive of everyone. And they are just, I've never seen a band get 50,000 people on their level.
Yeah.
Or they just pull everyone down and go, you're not here to see us, we're here to see each other.
Yeah.
Right down to they get a heap of crowd lighting on a lot.
Yeah.
Because they just want to see who they're playing to.
Yeah, wow.
So they connect off yep. that, and then for them to, for a band like that, which is unique, and that's why they're still going.
Yeah. I remember you've always said Eddie's like very like that, very genuine, unique dude. And BC sent me a picture of a lighter that was something that he gave him on the tour and said he learned your name, he remembers your name, he talks to you. Yeah, BC just came off it going, wow, what a good bloke. And no wonder you guys have been mates for so long. It's fun. I don't want to steal your story, but I remember we were sitting in your kitchen. You were saying you'd just been at Eddie's place and there was a bunch of people hanging out as a party, and there was like all these sorts of different people there, and you'd met a youngish sort of actor fella, and he was saying that you were like, "G'day, mate, how you going? And what do you do with yourself?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, I do a bit of television, bit of movies. I'm getting into some stage work, like for theatre stuff." And then he said to him, "Oh, look, mate, there's plenty of money and stuff in theatre. You'd want to keep up with that." And then you went, I'll get a photo of this actor. You might know him." And he went and got this photo, and it was of Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
who I think I'm pretty sure that year was like one of the highest grossing actors of all time, yeah. of that year. He'd just done a Star Is Born, which I reckon he probably
learnt
a lot of that off
because Ed's,
you fellas.
Yeah, Ed said, well, there's a bloke coming around, a mate of mine, and he spent a couple of weeks to learn the rock and roll swagger.
Oh, so it was legitimately that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah. He was writing the screenplay there.
Yeah, because you can't unsee it. When you see Eddie and then you see him doing that, that just feels...
Very, very similar. And as Karen said, because that was we'd got married, and that was our honeymoon.
That's right, yeah.
And she goes, well, and there was only Luke and Bradley and Ed and Karen in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So Karen's got the bragging rights now, even though it got on the sauce for 3 days. She goes, oh, Eddie Vedder and Bradley Cooper come to my honeymoon. So she's
And you left with Ross?
Yeah. Wow.
That's sick, of course, of course.
They're gorgeous.
That's so good.
If you're a bit like me and you want to say no to water, then be like me and always keep a slab of Heaps Normal in the fridge. It'll get you through those good times that are too good to be wasted. And when I'm on the dozer, Heaps Normal, non-alcoholic beers give me the same heavenly taste of beer when I just can't afford the hassle. I call them stunt beers because you get all the action without anyone doing a mischief to themselves. Heaps Normal, too good to be wasted. All right, mate, so, like, you're overseas, Jen's at home with Snowy. It's a lot of stress and strain sometimes, but how do you make it work, mate? How do you work it through it?
I reckon that because Jen's never been a jealous person, and I feel that that is a really important thing with a partner and a person in a band. The trust there for both of you when you're away on the road constantly and... some people probably think girls and guys are screaming at you from the crowd, offering you all sorts of offers. And I think with us, jealousy has never once played into it. And because she's a school teacher and she's got a job and she's got her own career, which is just the most attractive thing ever for a guy, is to have a partner who has their own thing going on. Mm-hmm. It's always been something that has meant that we can do the time apart very easily. She's got her own career, polar opposite worlds. You know, she's into bed at 8:30 every night, cup of tea. I'm barely getting out of bed at 8 o'clock at night, about to go do a bunch of tequila and play a show. And then when we get home, we just talk a lot and make sure we always like we've always slept in the same bed. We've never, even if we had a disagreement about something, we just don't actually fight that much. And I know a lot of people, that much, really at all. I should be like that much. We just don't have one of those relationships, which is like, I'd say I'm probably the worst in it because I'll be like, oh, I want a beer or something like that, but I shouldn't be drinking. She's like, well, just have a beer if you want a beer. Like, you know, even the guys say, you got lucky with Jen. I just think that we're just each other's best mates, which is super important when you're blokes like us.
Yeah. Not as us. Yeah, before you were talking about this, how do you really work out the chemistry, just get along, be in a band and stay mates for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, the secret to And look, I'm not going to pretend that I'm the greatest psychologist in the world, but I do know that in our band, you got to bring it up straight head on. There's no time really to really just spend years sitting around and dancing around a subject. And sometimes it's the best way, because in our band, Brett likes to be quiet, you know, during the day. He likes his time to sit in the van, you know, be in his own world. And so, like you were saying earlier, do you think sometimes you would internalize that and go, is he off me? Is he off the situation? Is it? And it wasn't until us going, mate, what's going on? Like, why are you, you know, not talking or anything like that? And he just said, look, this is how I like to do things. And it instantly just took that anxiety of everyone else in the van off, because we didn't have to worry about him. And I do feel that we've always been able to talk, because, as you know, BC, he just wears his heart on his sleeve. So he's not someone that really won't tell you what's going on, or, and it's very easily readable on his face. He's
like a fish tank. Every fish in the tank.
And I think, and then outside of the band, the managers are the same. You know, like they're a fourth member of the band. I always feel that we've Maddie, who you know, Maddie.
Yeah.
He's like a brother to us, so we've always had that real, very open line of communication with him. Because if something gets, I do remember that big tour that we were talking about. That it was a massive tour, and we spent so much money on pyro and inflatables and all this stuff. And like you said, it played Festival Hall, and came time to payday, we were like, sweet, you know, rubbing our hands together, going, where's the money? What's my bank account going to be at? And we didn't get paid really anything. And Maddie said to it, he said, look, I'm offering my resignation. If it's something you guys need to discuss, but because I feel like I've let you down, I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying that, but he was just super open and honest with us about the mutual disappointment in that. And I said, mate, like, never, because there would be a lot of managers that wouldn't just take that on and just sort of say, look, my bad, or, you know, I'm sorry I didn't tell you guys this is how the budget was going or stuff. He just owned up to it, and we said we couldn't ask for a better manager, because you will be honest with us. And honesty and communication to us is like I reckon we're still really good tight mates, like speak to all of them every day, you know, for 10 years. Yeah.
I kind of miss the days when you'd get a lot of cash.
Yeah, cold hard cash.
Not that I didn't pay tax on it, mind you, I declared everything. Mm. But yeah, back in the late 80s, you'd do two nights at the Prince of Wales, you get 1,500 people there, and I'd walk home with a big bag of money.
Yeah.
And then I'd work out what tax I had to pay and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That was pre-GST, I think, too, which is nice. Yeah. But it's amazing how you see the turnover, but is everything just got too expensive?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing I can understand, because we've just toured for 18 months.
Yeah.
And yeah, the turnover's there, but gee, the expenses, it's just the world.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and sometimes people can look at money, you do all this work and stuff, but look, I'm personally lucky.
Yeah.
And Macca, they've been personally lucky, because we all work.
Yes.
Which is, we're the kind of band where we're lucky enough to, we don't make any money in the job. We don't make any money in rock and roll, but we've got a job to fall back on.
Yeah.
I know it can put a lot of pressure on going, oh, we've got 2 months in Europe. It's a lot of pressure on your business and that kind of stuff.
Outside of the business pressure, has it been ever a strain on your relationships? I mean, because me personally, I was touring heavily when I first met Jen. So it's always been something that she's always just never had to really grind me for it. She's like, I knew what I was getting into. Mm. At times, especially now I've got a son, it gets to the 10-day mark and I really felt homesick for the first time ever about a month ago. I was just, she was struggling a bit with the baby, was crying constantly and I couldn't be there. And that was that sort of pressure of like, shit, I should be home right now. Mm. How did it go with you? Because you would be touring and having young kids on there, and
it's not great. It's not great, and you'd think, well, because quite many years there, the band subsidised the conditions of where I was at the farm, and I could make enough to make a bloody payment on the farm or whatever, or a bulldozer payment or something. So it was kind of, I was caught in between both.
Yeah.
As far as missing your kids, it's just, you never realise how hard it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's the best thing that happens to you in the world.
Yeah.
And if I'd known now, I would have done it when I was 16.
Yeah, I kind of was the same. I kind of thought, no, I'm never, like, I'm just going to keep touring. That's all I need to do. I just want to be in a band. And then I'm 39 now. And I was like, and I got 3 months old. I'm like, shit, I would love to be this age and he be 15. Oh. And I'd be like, sweet. And I mean, obviously, you know, grass is always greener and what could have, should have been. But you know, I really hope that I'm your age and I'm getting to bring him to these shows and doing shows, and
it's great fun. Yeah. Touring with kids is look. I think you're going to tour with Jen and
he's,
Snowy.
Yeah, he's coming to the last 10 days of the American tour. So we're
Is he going to bring Jen, or is he just coming on his own?
I think he's bringing Jen, and it's going to be a big learning curve for us to go overseas I think he'd be 5 months old at the time.
Yeah,
but it was that thing of, I just looked at the heavy touring I'm doing Europe for the month before that, and I just didn't want to be away from him for 7 weeks. So I thought, well, if he can just come out to San Francisco, there's a direct flight, and then do the last 2 weeks over there, then it was about four and a half weeks that I'm away. And I think that's kind of a thing I'm going to try and implement, is that not go longer than a month away from him.
Even that's, after 2 weeks, it's a long drag.
Sure.
I mean, but Robbie Rocket and Narelle brought Billy and Daniel on tour. Daniel was really young. He might have been 18 months old or something, and Billy was probably 3.
Yeah.
And I remember there was one time there, we pulled up at CBGB's when it was still running in New York City, which was a complete dive but a great place to play. I remember we pulled up in the van and there's a couple of people outside wanting to sign records when we pulled up. I've got like dirty nappies, diapers, whatever you want to call it. I don't go, I'll be with you in a minute. I'm just running off down the street trying to find a dumpster. Just going, got to get rid of these first. It was like, had to be kids first.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it was lucky enough for me because I was already a dad and I got it.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. And then what would you be doing now? So 4 years ago or whatever, like just whenever COVID hit or something, and the world said you can't play music anymore because too many people get together. So
yeah, I tried.
Danny's got to get a job. What are you going
to
do?
I tried actually two jobs. I tried oyster farming, which is down in Maroombula, which was awesome. And then I tried flooring, like putting in floating floorboards for a couple of days because I had a lot of anxiety around COVID with the fact of, not anxiety, because that word gets thrown around a lot. I had a lot of apprehension about, well, are we going to even come out of this and be the band that can sell tickets? And also I had to look at myself and go, well, who am I without the band now? But like, you know, because you get so swept up in that's your identity. You just play music, you're with your mates, blah, blah, blah. If someone takes that away from you, you're sitting at home for 2 years and it's like, well, what do I do now? Like, who am I a bit? Because I needed to do something. I was just like, well, I've got to work. I've got to just, even if it's just a cashie for the day that I paid my tax on.
Of course.
I just felt, and then my mate owns a bakery. I was like, oh, I can drive some bread around for you. And I did flooring, put a chisel through my thumb, came home. And Jen's just like, well, you don't need to work right now. You've saved a bit. You just try and have a think. And I was like, oh, but what if the, you know, we come out and the band's not a thing. She's like, Danny, you're not a florer. You're not a bakery driver. You play music. That's what you do. I think she's seen me when I'm not doing it and I'm pretty neurotic. So I think she was just saying that, just please God, let him come out the back of this and still be in a band. When I put the chisel through my thumb, it was a week and a half before we were finally going back into a studio to record. And I just struggled to play the guitar because it was my left thumb. So, and Jen just said, you're not doing it anymore. Like I was pretty, you know, I'm sure when you start doing tradie stuff, you always bang your nails or, you know, your thumbs or, you know.
Once you get old, mate, you just stub your toes and get your fingers jammed indoors. Yeah. That's all you do in life.
Yeah.
You've got that to look forward to.
Okay.
Oh, bloody hell. All right, mate, you've got a long stint in front of you. You've got months of work. How are you going to keep yourself fit, level-headed, connected with home? How are you going to do that kind of stuff, mate?
Yeah, I'm probably still haven't quite figured that out yet. Like I was telling you earlier, it takes me a week or two to get home and feel right. And you can't do that, I've realised, with the little baby, because when I get home, Jen needs me straight away. You know,
hands up. You've got to go bang. I'm back in.
Yeah, I'm back in. Yeah. I'm at 2 a.m. when he's having a cry, you're straight in. And I think that, look, I'm still just trying to find my way in that world. I don't know. Are you the sort of person that has come downs post tour?
I'm kind of, it takes me ages to get down after a tour. And then within 5 days, I want to go back.
Yeah.
But, you know, different circumstances, because Jaika was so high needs, I just had to slip back in.
Mm.
So you're only a young dad, but for me it took me a little while to go, okay, I am a dad.
Yes.
And the response, it'll come more naturally.
Yeah. Like
it's not a problem. You just go, I just went, I have to do it, and that was it.
It is the being fit and healthy has, I mean, because you just mentioned Jaika and being high needs, and I remember we talked about it, you're telling me that you've always felt you need to be physically strong to be there for him, to help lift him and do all the stuff that you need to do. In a way, it was kind of probably a blessing for you that you had that responsibility that you had to, you couldn't shy away from. You were like.
Saved me life.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. That you just had to be there physically for him. And I do think for me mentally, it's the thing that I'm starting to get my head around that I don't, because I don't want, he's 3 months old right now, so he doesn't know if I'm in a come down and sort of stage a week after tour. But as he gets older, I don't want to be the dad that comes home and he's like, why is dad so distant, which Jen is grateful because she'll call me out on it. I remember when I saw you in Melbourne, I wasn't really drinking or partying that much on those shows because I thought at any moment I need to get on a plane if she goes into labour. And it started that role thinking of, I've got something at home that I might need to just go and do. And it's not just me on the road by myself now. It's like that thing of there's something at home that is there. And even today in the car, I was like, just checking the baby monitor on my phone. And it's just this thing that's constantly now, it's an unconditional love that I just fucking love being a dad. A very hands-on dad. Like, I bathe him. I change nappies. I do all that sort of stuff. It's pretty addictive once you're in.
Yeah, you go, oh, poo. And then once you're in there, you go, well, it's half mine. You've got to take ownership. It's fine.
It's good. I mean, did you ever write a song for the boys at all?
No, I know there's a lot of songs that have been written about people, but for me it's my boys are so personal that I don't think I need to.
Mm.
They know how I feel about them.
Yeah.
And I don't have to tell the world because I can't explain how I feel about my boys.
Mm.
So I just went, I've never thought about it.
Yeah. I kind of feel as well with songs that songs come – they come about and then you just write because they've come about.
Yeah.
You go searching for the thing. I play guitar to him right now. I love sitting there and watching his eyes just go wide when you start playing music. Yeah, it's something that hasn't really transcended into art yet.
I just find it too emotional. I don't know how you're going on planes at the moment, but
what is it with planes?
But on planes, watching a movie, when I became a dad, a movie comes on that I normally go, stupid movie. Like, I remember coming back from like Perth or something and like Babe, which is a great film.
Yeah.
But I never cried to it. And then as soon as I became a dad, I'm like, I'm in tears.
It's so true. Planes get you anyway, I feel. Are you comfortable with crying now?
Oh, of course I am.
Yeah.
I sit on a plane now. I don't watch any films on the plane. I'm not hard. What's a hard dogging? They call it now.
Oh, yeah, where they just stare at the map.
Yeah, I'm just like, bugger off. But I sit back, close my eyes. I rewind my life.
Mm.
And sometimes it gets very emotional.
Yeah.
So I'll sit on a 14-hour trip and just rewind fun. But every now and again you rewind some emotions and I'll sit there bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
And people, are you all right? I go, yeah, I'm fine. I'm playing my own film. It's good.
It's a strange one because the older you get, I find now I'm getting a bit more emotional. Like I was raised a lot by my grandfather who was in the Second World War, and he was just like, you just put up and shut up.
Just jump over that trench and get shot.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And so it's getting to that stage where now I want that relationship with my son that I was like, I'll be to him. Like, you can cry.
It's a great relationship to build.
Mm.
It's really good. And you learn so much from your kids.
Yeah.
Like that's the best thing I took out of Jaika, who's been my greatest teacher.
Yeah.
And even Gage, I'm learning stuff out of Gage and going, how could you be so sensible at 18? You know, I'm lucky. Well, I'm not lucky, but I'll support him through thick or thin. But
you guys were always very mates as well, though. I do remember this, Stephen. You've always been the dad with him that's been, you know, just the way the stuff you do together, the way you talk about it, feels like, you know, you've been a mate to him.
Again, we go back to the band thing. It's about sorting shit out quick.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let anything fester. If anything's going wrong, approach it quickly.
Yeah.
That's only me as a dad. With Jaika, he was always teaching me.
Yeah.
But with Gage, it's sort of like we just have a bit of a yarn and that kind of stuff. And I go, well, this is what you've done. This is the consequences.
Yeah.
It's none of that what I used to get in the old days of the clip over the ears and I'll take your motorbike keys off you and you've stolen my ute again.
Yeah. I mean, with Jaika, like, because you – I remember seeing you two together, you just know how he's feeling when he's upset at something. How are those disagreements go?
Well, like,
quickly, I'll just do this one for him. Yeah.
No, it's working it's supporting anyone with a disability, whether it's my son or someone else.
Mm.
You just have to spend enough time with them to understand their language. They have to teach us.
Yeah.
It's not looking after them, it's supporting them to live a life.
Mm.
And when I finally got that through my head with Jikes, I'm not looking after you, I'm supporting you to live a life. And he got to 27, so that's unreal. But he taught me so much in that 27 years. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to get back into the supporting role a little bit. It's a bit hard, but it's great because it's eye-opening and spending time and understanding their language. It doesn't matter if you're verbal.
Mm.
You just got to learn. They teach you.
Yeah.
They teach you. And he lived a great life.
What was his favourite band?
Oh, June Rats. Actually,
not the Cosmic Psychos.
No. Oh, he didn't mind the Psychos. His actually favourite drummer is the guy that plays for Pearl Jam now, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
It's fucking great because he plays a slight offbeat.
Yeah.
And he's got six sets of sticks from him because he used to walk off stage and hand them to Jikes every time. So he loved it. Did you know that I really like beer? Well, I'm here to tell you about a bloody ripper of a Victorian beer called Bodrigi Brewing. And I bloody love them because they brew beers that taste like beer. It's beer so good, we're making a Cosmic Psychos draft with them. Available on tap at all good pubs. If your local doesn't have it, ask them why. Good on you, Bodrigi. Well, mate, you've been doing this for 14 bloody years. You've got five albums up your court. So, you know, how do you think the music industry's changed in that time?
I guess the biggest thing which you touched on earlier was COVID, which it just feels like a dirty word because it got used so much with the music industry. But I remember speaking to I was having drinks at a bar at home and the local MP sort of person was there and she said, how's the music industry with COVID and stuff? And I said, you probably won't see the true effect for years after it because what happens is when you shut down 200, 300 cap venues, you lose that ability for bands to work up to 500, 600, 1,000, 2,000 cap venues. You need those 200 cap venues so that this band can sell tickets to a half-filled 200 cap, 100 cap room. Then people can see them there and go, this band's going, because no one can just go straight into those 1,000 cap rooms. It's a slow, very fragile ecosystem of, you know, supporting your mate's band and then the next one. And and doing that. Now TikTok and that's getting past us. We're becoming, I guess, a bit of the dinosaurs in that regard. But you're seeing it. It's hard. People aren't – those 2-3 years, people weren't into – especially 15-year-olds when they were 15 when COVID hit, they lost that sort of like thing of, oh, I'm going to go to the pub, watch bands, especially 18-year-olds, I guess, when COVID hit.
Or even sneaking in.
Sneaking in, because we didn't go to pubs until we were 18,
no,
right?
Yeah. Because I was too busy paying taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so now we're kind of seeing that is that it's those venues that had to close down. It's slowly starting. I found ticket sales for us overseas this year are way better than they were a year ago. And overseas was, I guess, a bit of a precursor to Australia. We were later to close and later to deal with that stuff. And I found that Australian music industry now with tickets is like tough. It's a tough world. Festivals going under.
Well, you've nailed it, because we used to play in bars that wouldn't hold 100 people or 90 people or even 50. And then that's where bands would start. And as you said, you'd support your mate's band who pulled 20 people.
Yeah.
But we could use their amps. Yeah. So, but that was that, especially Melbourne was great. Melbourne, having, it was my closest city, but they had the most amazing scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was just so many pubs. You could walk down the street and see 5 bands in Fitzroy.
Yeah.
You could walk down the street in St Kilda and see 5 different venues, all within walking distance.
Yeah.
Like a one-can traveller.
Yeah.
And it's sort of that, that died.
A one-can traveller.
And that's close.
Yeah.
A 10-can trip, you better get a taxi.
Yeah, is that you walking from the farm to Melbourne, is it?
No, that's
a 300-can traveller.
Oh, geez, that's 3 days. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We won't go there. But yeah, it's changed a bit. But I think in Melbourne, I mean, I don't know, who do you think? But places like the Tote, which is a 200 capper, and the Punters Club used to be there, like little venues.
Northcote Social, I remember.
Yeah, Northcote Social, all that stuff. And that supported young bands. Like, we started at the Prince of Wales. It had every Thursday night or Wednesday night was free night.
Yeah.
And we started supporting the other bands. So it was free to get in.
Yep.
And we just thought, if we can get to headline the free night, me and Bill
did
and
you get Dirty, paid? For the free night?
No, it was free.
Free all round.
But we didn't have to pay for the PA.
Okay, yeah.
Because when we started at Spring Plains, we'd play at the Tote.
Yep.
We get there, and it was a great little venue there, but we had to pay for the PA.
Yeah, wow.
So when we finished, they'd give us a couple of jugs of beer and go, 6 payers, you owe us $75 for the PA.
Well, because I feel, I don't know who said this, now it's getting to a stage. Oh, no, it was our booking agent, Andy, was saying that he feels the music industry now is going back to bands having to go play where the people are, rather than where our industry got to a stage where people would go and see the band. You'd book your venue, everyone would go to see the band. But this industry state at the moment is, all right, where are the people all going to drink? Breweries or pubs or whatever pub is thing, and that's where the band wants to go play. It's getting into that, I guess, earlier thing of there's the band night at the pub. You want to go play there because that's all the people, because people are just not, the industry is still recovering, and so they're not just everywhere's open, everywhere's packed, which right before it was going off. It was crazy good.
But also, like, social media, that's like rock and roll was a game of chance.
Yeah.
I'd pick the paper up on a Friday and the Age newspaper would have a 6-page gig guide.
Yeah.
And there was, like, it was just bands playing, like, for the weekend.
Yeah.
And you could go, oh, that sounds cool, I'll go and see that band. And you had no idea. There wasn't the TikTok or the YouTube or...
Did you think when you were back then, I've always wanted to ask you this, is it... When you're playing with like Mudhoney, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, all those ones back in the overseas circuit and stuff, did you feel like you guys were going to be legends? Did it feel like you guys were just bands playing at the pubs and doing all this stuff, or did it feel like you guys were going to be kind of these ones that were going to stick around in people's minds for 100 years?
How we've hung around for so long, I have no idea.
Yeah.
We hung around with those blokes and played with them because they were good blokes.
Yeah.
And then when the music industry exploded,
Unfortunately, we got hit by shrapnel. And we weren't a part of it. But we only weren't a part of it because, A, we were ugly, and, B, no fucking good. But we, all I've ever been when bands, you see bands you played with or they might have supported you or you played with them or something, I just get excited.
Yeah.
Because I love, you know, as much as I'm just a yokel from the country, I like you blokes, I've followed you guys just and supported you guys, and a lot of bands going really well now. I love the way the success is coming because it's great, especially from Australia now, because it's great Aussie pub rock.
Do you know what's okay? I guess it's this the whole thing of success that we were talking earlier as a band. What's funny is because the bands that love you, you're a band's band, obviously, because you've got bands like The Chats, Animal and the Sniffers, us. We just idolise you fellas. And then you got like on that Nirvana, Mudhoney, Pearl Jam, just love you guys. It's funny because you never think as a young Ross Knight on the farm that like some of the biggest acts back then, just that you're their favourite band. And then, you know, Animal and the Sniffers undoubtedly are one of the biggest Australian bands right now.
Hardest
the
Chats, working and going great. Yeah, Chats, hard Chats as well. Working.
We're the ugly ones hit by shrapnel.
It's still working, mate, because when I saw you at the forum, people are smiling.
Mm.
And if you can make people smile in a world that it is today, well, it doesn't fucking matter, does it?
Yeah.
Was make them smile.
Was it always like when you were young? I mean, because there's always been political bands forever, and our bands aren't overly political. Really. If they ever put a tax on beer, well, they've already taxed beer, but, you know, it's probably the most political we'll get. But, you know, is it something that, we've always just played in bands to make people laugh and escape all that shit. You
absolutely.
Know?
Have a night out.
But I guess, has that been a thing that you just kind of always gravitated towards playing with people that are like-minded? I mean, there's...
Well, yeah, someone asked me a question years ago, you're not very political? Mm. I said, well, just buy a Midnight Oil record. And that's not hanging shit on Midnight Oil. But if you want to listen to a political record, go buy Midnight Oil. They're a great band and they've got a great message.
Yeah.
Ours is go out, get drunk, have fun, which is a little bit like the June Rats, and just get out there and do it. Like, it's like, and, you know, you guys don't whinge.
Yeah.
You play great rock and roll.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that gravitates me to you guys.
Yeah.
And you have fun.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that when we're talking about writing together is it's so easy to write music when you're having fun.
Yeah.
It's impossible if you're not. Some people write music when they're not having fun and they write great, sad songs that we'll probably cry listening to on a plane, but it's not why we're in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Unreal. All right, mate. Well, thanks for your time, brother.
Thanks, mate. They can't see the handshake. The handshake's there.
But it was real.
Yeah.
It wasn't an AI one.
No.
You've got to get to a sound check.
Yeah.
And see you soon.
So there you have it, just a couple of mates having a catch-up, chatting about life and music and everything in between. Thanks, Danny, for interrupting your pre-show ritual, and I'm looking forward to catching up again and seeing how your young family is going. June Rats are currently on tour in the States, and they're bound to be playing some local shows over the summer. Don't make a liar out of me, boys. Give the kids what they want. How You Going is produced by Sam Loy with Matt Weston as the executive producer. It's proudly supported by Heaps Normal and Bod Riggy Brewing, the best brewskis going around. Come back for the next episode of How You Going, where I'll be having a chat with old mate Dan Peters from Mudhoney. Here's a sneaky look.
At that point, I had just like this little drum set that I loved and thought was great. You know, Kurt brings in some kind of stack of some sort, and you know, Chris has his, you know, big bass cabinet, and I've got my little wee little drum set. I should have saw the writing on the walls at that moment.
And remember that the Cosmic Psychos are touring in November with Dan Peters, if you don't mind, as we try to flog our new album, I Really Like Beer. Check out thecosmicpsychos.com.au for all the drip trade details. All right, I've got to get out of here. I'll see you soon.
How you going, yeah?